are back for another episode. Today is episode 62. 62. Isn't that crazy, Brian? We are motoring right along in the middle of summer right now. And today on the show, we have the head coach of the number one ranked strawweight in the world, Claudia Gadella, of course, I'm talking about. And her coach is Mr. Chris Luttrell. Can't wait to talk to him. Very, very experienced coach and fighter. Everything that he's done in the sport of mixed martial arts. So there's going to be a lot to talk to with this man here today. Also, Pat Casey, who captured his second amateur belt. He won the vacant welterweight belt for Premier FC, and then he went on to capture the middleweight belt, and that was in beating Costa Gemelas in early June. So this is a guy that's on the rise and has an abundance of talent and clearly a great work ethic. If you follow him on social media, he lives, eats, breathes, sleeps MMA. So Pat Casey, someone you really need to keep your eyes on, and we're going to have him back on the show for the second time today.
Yeah. What do we call him? Patty Two Belts?
Patty Two Belts, yeah. that works. I mean, and as far as he's concerned, he's looking for a third belt.
Yeah.
This guy, he's a wild man.
I love that he's able to fight in so many different weight classes and is not scared to. Some guys might get scared going up a weight class, or they might get scared about the cut going down a weight class, but does not seem to factor in phase Pat at all, which is a great sign to see.
Yeah, and if you take a look at his body, he's just built for this. This guy looks, he's built like a football player, to be honest. But he's right in that perfect height and frame where he could fight at 55, he could fight at 70, or if he didn't want to cut any weight at all, he could fight at 85, and he's got that brute strength where I don't think it matters what weight class he fights at. I think whatever he decides to do when he turns pro, he'll be just fine.
I think some organizations are just salivating over the thought of Pat Casey joining their organization, whether that's the top of the top or if it's just some of the regional promotions that would just like, we want Pat Casey's first pro fight. They have a star in the making for sure, and a guy who already has claimed some gold, as you alluded to. So
yeah, no doubt. So we'll dive into what he's already accomplished in his career and what's next for him. So a couple of great guests as always. How about Claudia Gadella? Her last time out, impressive performance and picked it up another win. Hopefully, at some point down the line, we'll get that third crack at Ioana champion.
I think she will, too. Not that this division is barren right now, but there are some contenders that have yet to arise out there that have been new, some new faces we haven't seen before to take on Ioana. There's some talk that Rose Namajunas might be the next combatant against her for that title at 115. But after that's done, and Jen Jacek wins again, which is probably going to be the likely outcome because she's like the female version of Mighty Mouse. I'd like to see Claudia get her shot again because I think she's proven it. She has been much better recently after losing that last time out against Ioana, and she actually took Ioana champion to the limits as well.
And she hurt her.
Yeah.
There was a couple times where Ioana was hurt, and Claudia had a real opening to try and finish the fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, a third crack will definitely happen at some point, I believe. But you look at Claudia and what she's done. I mean, to beat Karolina Kovalkiewicz the way that she did in round one of her last fight.
Yeah.
I mean, Kovalkiewicz, the only other person to beat her was Ioana, and she took Ioana the distance. So the very, very impressive performance and really a statement that she has made to the rest of the division and to Ioana that, hey, you may have beat me, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to keep working, keep getting better. So we'll talk to Chris Luttrell about, Coach Chris Luttrell, about all of that and all the strides that she has made since she's went over to his gym.
And we'll find out if she got that nice dog, or that little dog that she was looking for. Yeah, and again, coming up this week, and we talked about Claudia in her last fight for the UFC pay-per-view of, I believe that was 212, right?
That was
212.
Yeah, 212.
Because that was the last one.
Aldo Holloway.
And we got a big one coming up this weekend, too. 213, right around the corner. Looking forward to it. It's almost like the Super Bowl time for the UFC. Traditionally, the first weekend after the 4th of July is their big international fight week. It is also where they have a couple of different cards. It all emanates from Las Vegas. You can meet and greet with all these fighters and everything. And they try to have a spectacle card. Last year was UFC 200, and it sort of fell apart a little bit. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't as good as it could have been. But it was still a fine card to watch.
I mean, Brock Lesnar came back. Yeah. You almost had DC, John Jones, in that fight.
Yeah.
But, of course, things sort of to crumble a little bit.
He fought Anderson, and he really dominated Anderson right up until that third round. And Anderson started to pick up steam, and it looked like he hurt DC. So that was an interesting fight to watch.
But this time around, you get a decent card. It might not be as good as even the one that's coming up after that in 214. But I think a lot of people are going to be hungry for some mixed martial arts, and this is the perfect time of year. There's not much going on. NBA free agency, NHL free agency, which is dying down a little bit day by day by day. And right now it's basically just baseball for the next month or so before we get off-season workouts commencing and then into preseason for the NFL. So there's a couple-month window where right now MMA could really reign supreme.
And I think that Dana White and the UFC brass, they've known that for a while now, and I think that that's part of the reason why they really dive into the deep end and really put up some good shows here in July and August, which they've done year in and year out for a while now. So a lot of great fights to talk about and some really important ones that is going to set up some championship fights for the latter part of the year as well. So important fights for a lot of great fighters.
And we'll go into depth in those ones a little bit later on for UFC 213, and we will give our fearless predictions, which probably don't bet on. We're not condoning betting. We're not saying you shouldn't bet, because it actually might be legal here soon. Do you see that that the Supreme Court's going to be looking at the New Jersey betting case?
Right,
it's kind of cool, I guess, if you're so inclined. But we're not very good at it. We've tried. We're decent at it. But again, if you're trying to make money off of them, I would say look elsewhere. Because I don't want to be on the hook for that. Come on, I don't want that pressure.
Exactly. I don't want to be the reason someone can point fingers at me and say, I listened to that Jarrell's opinion, and he screwed me over. I lost $100 because I thought this was someone that knew what he was talking about.
I bet my house mortgage. I had a second mortgage because Jarrell said that so-and-so is going to win, or that Stack fellow said that, bet the farm on, just insert random fighter here.
Yo, Ramiro, Brian, I go for a fight. It's okay, Michael Bisping, I love you. That's probably my favorite fighter to impersonate, even more so than the Diaz brothers. I love doing a Yoel Romero. It's hysterical.
He's a unique guy because he looks like an absolute guy who could murder you with just looking at you.
He's a soldier of God. That's his moniker, soldier of God.
He's not a scary-looking dude, but he just looks intimidating because of the size and stature. But then you hear his voice, and it's like, okay, it's not as bad. Okay, I'm not feeling as bad about this whole situation, at least now. But whatever. I don't know. I might be interested in Yoel. He could be a nice guy to look at.
Well, I mean, what do you mean nice guy to look at?
In terms of betting, if you were so inclined.
All right.
Don't take my words out of context. I'm going to go on a Chael Sonnen little diatribe on you, Ryan Jarrell.
You need to get a little bit more nasally, Brian Stackpole. If you're going to do Chael, get it right and go make me a medium steak rare.
I feel like that's almost a little too nasally, though.
Think so?
I think if we combined ours two together, it would
be the perfect,
perfect
one.
Yeah. We'll have to do it. We'll have to do it at the same time, like script it out and just get like the perfect tone, like the amalgamation of the Chaels.
Well, again, a lot of characters in the world of MMA, as both we are, a couple of characters here trying to do our best to entertain our listeners. But we're going to press pause on that for right now because we're going to take a break, give a little shout out to our wonderful sponsor, the Sea Dog Brewing Company, and we will be right back with head coach Chris Luttrell. Here at the Main Event, we are very proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. A couple of big things that are going on this summer at the Sea Dog. Tuesday nights, you can get $2 tacos as well as $2 Modelos. And from 6 to 8:30 on Tuesday nights, they have Name That Tune. So that's a good fun evening to do with the family or your friends if you want to head down to the Sea Dog on Tuesdays for $2 tacos and $2 Modelos. Also on Thursday nights from 6 to 8:30, they have trivia and prizes for trivia. So if you want to go and have some fun and test your knowledge and win some prizes, the Sea Dog is the place to go. As always, the Sea Dog is located at 26 Front Street in Bangor on the Penobscot River. You can reach them at 947-8009. Or if you're online, you can check them out at seadogbrewing.com and on Facebook at Sea Dog Bangor. The Main Event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog. And really, when you get get a chance, go down to the Sea Dog and check them out, because not only is the menu the best, but they have unbelievable drafts on tap and a fun environment for everyone to enjoy. The Sea Dog, Front Street, Bangor. Joining us now is the head coach of the number one ranked women's strawweight in the world, UFC strawweight contender Claudia Gadella, who just had a big win at UFC 212 over Carolina Kovalkiewicz, co-owner and coach of Latrell Yee MMA and Fitness in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Chris Latrell joins the main event. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thanks for having me, sir. I appreciate it.
It's definitely a pleasure. And again, you've been doing a lot of traveling lately. I believe you just got back into the States. What's the traveling life been like?
Oh, it's been nice. You know, sir, I also work a full-time job. I'm a police officer for the Albuquerque Police Department, so trying to fit everything in. And, you know, I was in Brazil for 10 days with Claudia, and then I get back, a family vacation down in Cabo San Lucas, and now I head to Houston this week. I got a fighter fighting for the legacy title fight, and then the week after I go to Mexico City with another one of my fighters. So we're kind of blowing up, and I'm a little out of control right now.
So the legacy title fight, are you talking about Brendan Allen?
No, it's 125 pounds. My fighter's name is Jerome Rivera.
Jerome Rivera, okay. And so what talk about that fight a little bit. We actually had both combatants from the main event, Brendan Allen and Eric Anders, on the show recently, actually our last show. That's a really good promotion. What is this fight card going to look like?
You know, it is a good promotion, I guess. You know, Legacy and Resurrection, RFA came together, and man, they're a force. They're, you know, one of the top shows, really feeders into the UFC, and they're an amazing show, and we've got a 125-pounder, Jerome Rivera. And he's 7-0, he's undefeated, and he earned himself a title, you know, a title shot. And so he's very, very young, and we're real excited for his future and just, you know, to see him get in there and mix it up. He's still growing.
Yeah, and you guys have a lot of up-and-coming fighters. Obviously, Albuquerque, New Mexico is a hotbed for mixed martial arts. First off, let's talk about Claudia for a second. Unbelievably successful trip to Brazil for UFC 212. Could that result have gone any better?
No, it really couldn't have. It, you know, she joined Latrell Yee MMA two fights ago, so we got her about 10 weeks before she fought Courtney Casey. And, you know, our chemistry, we just hit, you know, her and I hit it off right away. She's got a great sense of humor, you know, and her passion for MMA is I've never, you know, seen anything like it. And so we clicked right away, and we've been gaining momentum, and, you know, the chemistry's there. And so we've just been moving forward. And it's like she told me day one, and, you know, starting all over, she had never seen any techniques that we show her. She'd never seen them before.
Wow.
So, yeah, so she's real excited, and we just got her looking at the whole fight game, just through a different filter.
Now,
and
obviously things are going great. I mean, huge win over a tough opponent. What were some of the major factors you had to consider when preparing for such a game opponent like Kovalkiewicz?
You know, her striking game, Carolina's striking game is a high level, you know, a lot of footwork changes side to side, she, you know, moving in and out. And that's tough to prepare for as far as, you know, striking and setting up your takedowns. And so, you know, we brought some karate style, you know, female fighters in from different parts of the Southwest and had them, and then we would have them move with Claudia. You know, we said, hey, study Carolina, you know, and mimic her and turn into her. And so before Claudia got in there with Carolina, she'd already done it in her mind, you know, every weekend for 10, 11 weeks. So that really helped her prepare for that movement.
You know, and I was interested with some of the things that she said post-fight about not focusing on getting another crack at Joanna anytime soon. What do you think the future holds for Claudia, and what would happen if she got another crack at the current champ?
Well, you know, we'd talked about that in depth. And right now, you know, she's new to our style, and our state. We're just adding tools to her arsenal. And she's having fun again, and we talked about it, and she's growing, like, every single week. She's getting better, adding more tools. And we're like, you know, we don't want that title fight yet. Like, give us another fight, maybe two, and, you know. And I said, let's not just go out and beat her. Let's not, you know, let's go out and dominate her. So, you know, she just wants to continue to grow and get to a certain point before she, you know, takes that rematch.
How long until you think we're going to see that third matchup?
You know, I would say after another fight or two. You know, I think that's enough time where, you know, really, you know, see the public would go, hey, you know, they start seeing Claudia, you know, new and improved, seeing her finishing folks, and, you know, seeing her new fire for the game. I think the fans are going to want it.
Well, after the fight, she said in the cage side interview that she wanted to get a nice car and a fancy dog or something along that lines. Has she done either of those since that fight?
Well, not yet. So she had said she was going to move to Albuquerque, right? She said she was going to move to Albuquerque, get a fancy car, a nice car and a fancy dog.
Yeah.
So we're working on the dog, right? Kind of working on the car, working on all three of them. But, you know, she's very, very busy trying to, you know, wrap up a lot of loose ends right now.
So. Now, you talked about trying to build up the anticipation for yet another fight against Joanna. Is that part of the game nowadays where it's not necessarily on the wins and losses and who deserves the shot, but also what it appeals like to fans as part of this UFC culture that we've seen Conor McGregor exploit time and time again?
I think it is. It is. You know, unfortunately, it's turning into that instead of, you know, the contenders going up. But, you know, good or bad, I think it's kind of turned into that. But she wants to do it on her merit, and she wants people to be ready, because right now, we're not sure. We want people to say, hey, Claudia. Claudia is ready. They want to see it. We want people to be, you know, screaming for it, and I think that will happen. You know, she just keeps improving, keeps finishing people and having fun and getting better every day. I think people will want to see it.
And I completely agree. I definitely think the fans will want to see another matchup with Joanna, especially since, you know, when they fought twice, there was a split decision and then a unanimous decision where I thought Claudia really got some good work on Joanna in the early rounds of that second fight. So that's definitely a fight the fans will want to see at some point here again soon. Coach, I got to ask you, you talked earlier about your full-time police officer as well. You got a really interesting story. Tell us a little bit how you got to the point where you're at now in your career in mixed martial arts and how your job as a police officer translates over into MMA, because I'm sure you have to use some of your knowledge in MMA, hopefully not too often, because that's got to be a little bit more dangerous when you're out there dealing with people that, you know, might have a weapon or whatnot.
You know, sir, unfortunately, here in Albuquerque, things have gotten out of control. We, you know, Department of Justice came in and issued a mandate, kind of took over the police department as far as, you know, running a lot of the policies and procedures. And it's gotten to be, it's a very violent city. We're now the number one most dangerous state in the nation. We're the poorest state, I think, in every category. New Mexico is pretty much at the bottom. And there's more auto theft here now than any other state. I think 30 a day or something are stolen. It's really crazy. So in the past 2 years, unfortunately, I've had to use quite a bit of MMA. I've fought over my gun or somebody else's gun four times in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very violent place to work. But fortunately, I retire this coming December. And, you know, I was at Jackson's as a coach for years and years and finally branched out on my own here recently. And just looking forward to, you know, just doing mixed martial arts and coaching and running the school full time here. And I'm almost there.
Wow. So, well, congratulations ahead of time on your upcoming retirement. Very well deserved. And I can't imagine. I thank you for all that you do in protecting us citizens, because the police force in my book is, you know, that's one of the most important jobs in the world.
And difficult, too.
Oh, absolutely. So thank you for all that you do, sir.
Oh, you are welcome. You are welcome. Yes. Sir, I'll tell you, it's been a heck of a ride. You know, I'm blessed. I hate bullies. So being a police officer puts me in a position to, you know, take bullies and take people who victimize other people off the streets and incarcerate them. And then I get to coach MMA fighters, and I'm just really, really blessed. And I, you know, 25 years ago, I met Greg, one of Greg Jackson's top fighters, went over, we sparred and fought, and then I met Greg, and then I introduced Greg to Mike Winklejohn, and then I stayed on Greg Jackson, and I talked him into into changing his school into a mixed martial arts gym, because he just did, you know, self-defense, and I was like, look, this mixed martial arts thing is going to blow up, and I want to fight. So after, you know, weeks of pounding, and he finally said, all right, because I said, well, I'm going to go somewhere else and fight. I need a coach. Come on, let's do it. So got him on board, introduced him to Winklejohn, and then started the school going. And, man, it's been a heck of a ride. I fought for years, and then I took, you know, I've been a coach there for years, and I've traveled the world, been all over the world, you know, in MMA, and just, you know, I've been very, very blessed.
So basically, you're responsible for that historic MMA relationship.
You know, I am. And well, what was nice, though, what people don't know is how we created the system is I worked for an airline. So I graduated with a criminal justice degree, was a police officer in South Central Los Angeles. And in 1990, right, you know, the Rodney King era.
Wow.
It was really crazy. So I'm in South Central. And it's just wild. And as a police officer, they're asking me to do some things I just couldn't do. You know, I just couldn't. I'm like, nope, can't do that. And so I ended up quitting, and I went to work for an airline. While I worked for this airline, you know, I'm training at a judo school, and training with Winklejohn, and then. So what happened was I traveled to every single dojo that was out there on my overnight with this airline, and I would take notes, and I'd go in and roll with them and take notes, and then I'd bring it back to Greg. And then Greg and I would sit down, and we would go through, hey, this works for MMA, this doesn't, this works for MMA, this doesn't. So I was really, you know, in a good position and lucky.
Wow, and clearly things are going great for you now. It's kind of ironic listening to say you work for an airline, because I currently have a part-time job at Delta here near the airport that's in our hometown. And part of the reason why I got that is the free flight benefits. I want to be able to take off and go wherever I want. You said you just got back from Cabo San Lucas. How was that?
It was amazing. I pretty much worked two jobs, being a police officer and running the MMA school. And so I, you know, some days I don't have an extra 5 minutes to myself. And so my life had planned this a long time ago. And so I couldn't break it, right? I had Claudia's fight, and I was praying that Claudia's fight was, you know, before or after. And then I went, and now, you know, I'm back for a day, and then I go to Houston for the, you know, the LFA title fight, and then I go to Mexico City for Combates Americas with one of my fighters, and it just fell right in between all three of these fights where I could actually make them all. I was lucky.
Perfect timing. Perfect time for sure. Now, I have a question. It's going to be a little off the MMA beaten path, but when I think New Mexico, I think of Breaking Bad, specifically Albuquerque. How has that show changed that state and specifically that city, in your opinion?
You know, it's funny. It didn't help, like, with the, you know, what people think. You know, they visualize New Mexico. They think either, one, cops was finally taken off. The mayor wouldn't let cops come and film there because it was all the crazy episodes were all in Albuquerque because it's an absolute wild town. So the mayor, you know, everybody was thinking it was cool. Hey, we're on Cops. And they're like, you know what? This is not good for tourism. This is not good for people wanting to relocate here with their families. And so they get, you know, they get rid of Cops, and then bam, Breaking Bad comes out. And so everybody's like, oh my God, that is a crazy place. So I don't think it's helped, you know, with, you know, what people think in New Mexico. But it is funny because I'll tell people, you know, around the world, you know, where I'm from, and they're like, oh yeah, Breaking Bad. Yeah.
I don't know. It's the truth, though. You know, that show is so huge that, unfortunately, I guess it does create a little bit of a, unfortunately, a bad name or a stigma for that town.
I just feel bad for the person who owns the Breaking Bad house, the Walter Weiss house, because I hear that they get pizza thrown on the roof all the time.
They did.
That's right. No, Coach, obviously, with your upcoming retirement soon, your focus is going to shift completely to your gym. What are your goals for the gym? Do you want to try to grow it any more than it already is at now, or are you just in a good place where you're happy with everything you're doing and things are just going to be business as usual, except for you'll just be there more?
You know, so that's a tough one because If you notice, it's kind of a trend in MMA, is more and more top MMA fighters are going to smaller gyms, like think of a boxing camp. You think of a boxing camp, a boxer comes in, he has five or six coaches, and they bring in sparring partners, and every single move that boxer makes, he, you know, is critiqued by this coach, that coach. So, you know, that's where people improve. And so we don't want to get so big at our gym where we take away attention from the fighter, and it's getting kind of scary because we're starting to grow. People, you know, I'm going to retire. People are starting to hear about us, you know, and we're starting to grow and get more fighters. And so at what point do we as coaches cut it off and go no more? The same exact thing happened to Jackson. And, you know, unfortunately it changes. You know, when people start getting a little bit of fame, and you know, get a little bit of attention, you know, as coaches, and you know, and I don't, you know, we want to stay grounded. We want to make sure that our fighters, you know, those that created our system, those that, you know, create the school, that we give them attention, right?
Sure.
That we don't bring in so many fighters that all of a sudden it's diluted, and it's happening, you know, at the bigger gyms, and you see that, and so more and more MMA fighters, you know, are now going back to smaller places, bringing in their own coaches. And so that's kind of a tough one for us. I think we've already, just with Claudia coming in, people want to be around her. She's such a wonderful person with great energy. She's incredible where people, you know, you're around her 5 minutes, you want to go where she's at. And so, yeah, we're in a tough position.
And obviously, with the continual growth of mixed martial arts, that's going to be even more of a problem as time goes by, because, again, there's just going to be more and more people wanting to get into the sport. And then, again, when they see a successful coach and gym like yourself, I can see how that would be an issue. Coach, I'm also curious about your relationship now with Jackson Wink. I was watching UFC Countdown with Claudia's big fight with Kovalkiewicz, and it seems that everything between you guys is still very, very good, and you were going over there I think 3 times a week with Claudia to help her prepare for this fight, for her last fight anyways. How often do you kind of cross train and take your fighters over there?
You know, Mike Winklejohn and I remain very close. You know, so I'm very, very close with Mike. But not close with Greg anymore. So really, Mike took over the gym. You know, they opened up a new facility, and it's gigantic. It's just amazing, new facility. and Mike pretty much took over. Mike is very, very organized. You know, he can run, you know, a large gym like that. So I'm very close now with Mike, and I called him right away, and I was like, hey, I would love to bring Claudia over and some of the other top fighters. And, you know, Mike and I are very, very close, and he's like, absolutely, because he has a big stable of girls, you know, that I can, you know, Claudia can spar with and roll and you know, but then we take her back and she gets all of her technique work and, you know, drilling and conditioning and everything else at our gym. But, you know, I just, you know, Mike was completely, he's like, you know, anytime, Chris, anytime you want to bring your people over, you know, it's good for my guys. And so, yeah, we got a great relationship and Claudia likes going over there. And then, you know, we've got more and more females now joining our team.
That's fantastic, and I can only imagine that that's just got to help everyone involved, you know, when you're kind of combining your efforts to help these fighters really get to the point that they want to go to. I got to ask you before we let you go here, because obviously whenever we talk to someone that has as much experience in this sport as you do and as much knowledge as you do, I really am curious about the thoughts of who you think is going to win a couple of fights. The first one is the John Jones-Daniel Cormier rematch. Obviously, John has been at Jackson Winkle John for a long time now. Do you think that he's basically unbeatable and he's going to come back and just run through DC? Or do you think that Cormier has evolved to the point where now he's going to be able to defend that belt and actually hand Jones his first legitimate loss?
You know, when I go in, because I was in you know, Wink's place a lot. And I, you know, John is in there working. Like he's in there working. A lot. So I don't think we're going to see a drop off. You know, I mean, I do see him going in with some ring rust. I don't know if they'll give him a tuna fight, but, you know, I think that, you know, the next time they fight, it'll be much, much closer. But I think Cormier's, you know, he's getting up there in years. And I think I'll pick John, you know, in a close decision.
Okay, and speaking of getting up there in years, Floyd Mayweather is 40 years old. And again, I'm an MMA guy. I'm always going to kind of lean towards the mixed martial artist versus the boxer. However, I get it. I understand Conor is a significant underdog going into this fight because it's a boxing match. It's not a mixed martial arts fight. So having said that, though, do you think that Conor has a chance here against the 40-year-old Mayweather, or do you think Floyd's just going to run through him?
You know what? I think, you know, naturally, anytime, you know, two people in shape walk in there, I do think Conor. But no, I boxing and MMA are so, they're light years. You know, they're just so different.
Yeah.
And there's so many differences in every aspect. I think Mayweather's going to make him look silly. I really.
Yeah, we had.
And it's, yeah.
No, go, yeah. Go ahead, sir.
And I'll tell you, I hate the fact that, you know, there. I would like to see, like, you know what? I get it. They're going to box under those rules, but, you know, like, I'd love to see a boxer try to come over and, you know, accept a real fight. I would love to see, like, okay, we'll add in kicks, you know, just, you know, something to even it up. But I don't know. I'm good for Conor for, you know, for making that happen. And I think regardless, it brings good or bad. It brings more attention to the mixed martial arts, and you know. I think it's, you know, I'm just happy for Conor going to get that payday.
Like, could you imagine Mike Tyson going into MMA at the top of his image throughout the United States and the world, and had he brought that to the sport of the MMA and the UFC? Imagine how big the sport would be now if he had done that.
Oh, it would be giant, yeah. You know, and it's all about timing, and I think, you know, Mike would have been a champion at, you know, pretty much any combat sport. He's, you know, heavy hitter, relentless.
Right.
I think he'd have done well, but that would have been exciting to watch.
Yeah, and you know we've already seen the boxer come over to MMA before when James Toney fought Randy Couture, and that didn't go very well for Mr. Toney. But again, you know, either way, this is going to be just super exciting for combat sports fans in general. I think most MMA fans, even if they don't like boxing as much as MMA, they can at least appreciate it, and they'll enjoy watching it, and vice versa to some extent. So this is just going to be a huge spectacle that just captures the imagination and the wallets of people all across the country.
You know, it really is. I'm excited. I was with, so Conor's very first fight was in Sweden, and I took two of our fighters, Diego Brandao and Adlan Amagov, one of our Russian fighters, when I was at Jackson's, over to corner him for the fight. And I remember walking in, getting off the plane, the bus, walking in. And I see this McGregor kid walking around without his shirt on, with this, you know, crazy hair, walking around without his shirt on, and he's like prancing around the lobby. I'm like, who the heck is this? And then me, I'm Irish, and I'm like, oh, we got an Irish kid in, and you know, on the fight card. That's great. And then we're backstage warming up with him, and I remember Kavanaugh, his coach, was a very, very nice, grounded, you know, just seemed to be a great guy. And Conor was back there, and I almost, you know, thinking to myself, and I laugh now, but I almost wanted to reach out and go, hey, it would be good if you actually put some sweats on, get a sweat going. And then I wanted to show him, to show him some warm-up drill. He was spinning around, kicking the concrete, and I was like, oh, this poor Irish kid, you know, doesn't, oh my gosh, I wanted to reach out and help him, like a social, like, here's some warm-up drills, here's what, and get warm, and I wanted to talk to him, and then it goes out, and I was like, hey, that kid's tough, wow. So it's kind of funny, my initial thoughts of it.
Yeah, and look at him now. You know, it's crazy. And a lot of people get sick of listening to his mouth, and they think he talks too much and this and that. I love it personally because I just think that he's straight comedy gold. Like, leading up to the fight, he just makes me laugh, and I love laughing.
And his mouth is going to cash him a almost $100 million check, so I guess he's the one laughing now, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? Few people have that sort of wit.
Yeah.
Like, really, to pull it off. Or if you sit down and actually listen to it, he's funny. Oh. He's got a great sense of humor. It's like listening to Chael. You know, you listen to him, like, you know, these, and that's it. They're intelligent. Very, very sharp. You know, and then you read a little bit about him. You know, he was going by, you know, before he went to Sweden, he had to stop off the post office for his dole to go get his unemployment. You know, or, you know, he wouldn't have made it. Like, you read his story, and good for him. He worked his butt off, and, you know, so just another success story. So, I don't know. That's exciting.
It really is exciting, and it's great to see someone that goes from rags to the epitome of riches, and he's going to be set for life, and his kids, and so on. they're not gonna have to want for anything, because he seems like he's buying a lot of things with his money, but I'm sure he's being smart and investing. When you make that much money, then it doesn't really matter, because it's ridiculous. But Coach, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been a pleasure having you on here. Before we let you go, for anyone that's out there that might be listening in your area, how can they find you on social media, and how can they get in touch with you if they just wanted to come in for a workout or just to check the place out?
You know, they could go to abqkickboxing.com, abqkickboxing.com, or Latrell Yee MMA. And we're on Facebook and got a website. And, yeah, the team is growing. If somebody's interested in, you know, joining the fastest-growing, you know, MMA team in the Southwest, they could also give me a call. And I can – it's at 505-917-9195. And, guys, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Coach Chris Luttrell, again, the head coach of the number one ranked women's strawweight in the UFC, Claudia Gadella. Thanks again, Coach. Let's get you back on before her next fight or at some point here in the near future. It's been a pleasure.
Anytime, sir. Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
The heat is on, the summer is here, and there are so much fun things to do in this area. But you know what you need to do first and foremost? You need to have a good, enjoyable dining experience with really good food. Because you know what? That's first and foremost on my summer wish list. Yeah, it's getting a nice tan, it's working on the summer body, but it's also enjoying some of these great food items at the Sea Dog on the Front Street in Bangor. If you know me a little bit, you know I'm not one to really stray off of the burgers or the grilled cheese or whatnot. And that's why there's these perfect items here that can mix something I'm very familiar with something also I'm going to enjoy, like this lobster grilled cheese. It's sourdough grilled cheese with a lobster salad in the mix. So I get the comfort I have with a grilled cheese, but I can also include a little lobster. Get a little on the wild side there. How about a crab cake BLTA? Yeah, it's a crab cake served on a house bun with bacon, lettuce, tomato, and avocado. Oh, that sounds so good. There's so many great items at the Sea Dog at Front Street in Bangor for you to try, like a baked stuffed lobster entree as well, panko salmon, skewered tips, chicken and artichoke pasta. I'm just salivating thinking about all these things on the new 2017 Sea Dog Summer Menu. Go check it out for yourself. Tell them the Main Event sent you, and go try out some of these delicious, delicious items and wash it down with a nice, tasty beer. I would recommend the Blue Paw. It's my absolute favorite. One of the first beers I ever consumed as a legal, consenting 21-year-old who was able to buy alcohol, it was one of the Sea Dog Blue Paws. Absolutely one of my favorites. I'm actually going to go out there and buy one immediately after the show. We got to get some business done. But once this is over, I'm going to go get a Sea Dog Blue Paw because it sounds delightful on a nice summer day like today. Go check him out, Sea Dog, on the Front Street in Bangor.
Back on the show is a mixed martial artist on the rise. He just won his second belt for Premier FC, capturing the middleweight title to go with his previously captured welterweight title as he won a five-round unanimous decision over Costa Gemelis on June 10th at Premier FC 23. Pat Casey is back on the show. Thank you as always, bud.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, a hard-fought win over Costa. Break down the fight for our listeners who didn't get a chance to see it and explain how you were able to bring home some more hardware.
It was a hell of a fight. I would say it's probably my toughest fight I've had yet. It was a five-round fight. I won unanimous decision. It was more of a stand-up fight. We were both landing good shots. I was getting off more combinations opposed to his single shots. I think I was hurting him a little more in my shots. And later in the fight, I sealed the fight with some takedowns. The last two rounds, I started working my wrestling more, and I ended up with a unanimous decision. It was definitely a hard-fought battle. He was a great opponent. And, overall, I'm happy with how it went.
What were your emotions like after the fight ended? Did you know that you won the fight, or was there any doubt at all in your mind?
No, I was 100% sure I won the fight. I fought the first three rounds. After the first three rounds, I was confident I was up 3-0. The last two rounds were kind of close, but I had a lot of takedowns. So there was no doubt that I was going to win the decision.
You know, obviously getting the fight finished, whether it's, KO or submission, whatever it may be, that's the goal, I would think, for any mixed martial artist. And, Dana White always says, never leave it in the hands of the judges. This was your third straight unanimous decision victory. How bad did you want to get a finish here in this fight? And is that something that you really want to go out and do in your next time out?
I mean, I'm always looking for opportunities for a finish, but at this point, I'm very comfortable in there. So, I think in all actuality, the longer the fight goes, the more benefit it is for me. Because, guys can knock people out with lucky stuff early on. But if a fight continues to go on longer and longer, the guy who's the better fighter is going to show. So I'm okay with winning decisions. I've had a lot of early knockouts as well. Whatever way I have to get the job done, I will. I'm confident I can go the distance. I've done it in 3-round fights. I've done it in 5-round fights, 2 5-round fights as well. So, of course, the finish is always awesome. People like to see finishes, but, You got it. The win. The win is most important.
Now, obviously, the win's most important, and that's what you continue to do. Your last three fights have been at 155, 170, and now 185. What weight class do you plan to make your home officially? Or are you just taking a page out of Conor McGregor's book and just trying to capture all the belts?
Well, I mean, I definitely like challenges. You know, I like to do things a little different from everybody else. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to moving around to seek out different challenges and different belts, but I mean, the majority of my fights probably will be at 70. I mean, I can't say for sure, but you know, I fought the most at 70. I can make 70 pretty easily now. You know, that's something that took me a while to get the weight cut down, but I wouldn't oppose fighting 55 or 85 again, but 70 will probably be where I fight mainly.
Yeah, how tough was it to cut to 155, which you did just three fights ago? And is that something that might interest you to try to become even better than, like, a McGregor, so to speak, and have three belts around your waist when all is said and done?
Well, answer the first question, it was tough. It was definitely brutal cutting to 55. But, you know, I'm getting better at cutting weight. I'm getting better at nutrition. So that is definitely a possibility, an intriguing possibility to have three belts. Well, you know, we have nothing planned right now, but you know, I wouldn't rule that out.
Pat, what are your measurements here? How tall are you, and what do you typically walk around at?
Between 5'8 and 5'9, and I walk around probably about 185. I actually weighed in under 185 at this last fight.
Wow. Okay.
I weighed in like at 182.6 actually.
Okay, so the possibility of you getting down to 55 in the future, that is not too much of a concern, because I mean, just looking at your pictures and everything, you're a very muscular guy. I would have even thought that you weighed closer to 200 walking around, so the 55 pound cut would have been a little bit harder, but it seems like it'd be all right.
Yeah, people generally think I'm like 200 pounds just because my build. I'm shorter, but I have a lot of muscle, so I look heavier than I am. And I've also, as a side, my body's changing a little bit. You know, I came from like a football playing background, so being bigger was, you know, I always was trying to put on size. Now that I've been fighting for like 2 years, my body's changing a little. I'm getting more of a fighter's body, and my walk around, I used to be, you know, 190, 195. But now through fighting, I've gotten down to like, you know, I don't get in the 190s anymore. I'm always in the 80s. So, you know, 55 is possible. You know, I've proven I could do all three, so you know, it depends on the opportunity and you know, what's in front of me. I can make all three weights.
Well, what position did you play in football? Were you a fullback or a linebacker? That would just be my initial guess.
I played a lot of positions, but mainly I played running back and strong safety.
Okay. Yeah. Do you miss it? I mean, I know I miss my days when I played football. You know, not many people put the pads on when you go to college and the pros or whatever. But is that something that you still miss, or do you kind of get that itch scratched through MMA?
Yeah, I used to little, you know, when football season comes around a little, I watch and you know, I feel like getting back on the field. But this fighting is taking over my life at this point. You know, I don't really have the urge to play football anymore. I do, you know, miss it here and there certain times a year, but you know, I'm definitely 100% consumed in the fighting now.
Well, what is next for Pat Casey? You fought on basically all the consecutive Premier FC fights I've noticed since 19. You've done 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Can we expect to see you on the 24th card as well?
I think the 24th is the next card. I think they're doing one next month, but it's not going to be around here. I'm not sure if I'm going to be on that one just because I just, you know, came off a pretty tough fight. But their next one I'll be on. But in between, I'm looking to fight, you know, in the next couple months, definitely, whether it be for Premier or whoever.
Now, Pat, I had the opportunity to meet one of your coaches a while back in Jason Franklin, and he had nothing but amazing things to say about you. He told me, make sure you keep an eye on this kid. He's going places. Talk about what makes him such a good coach and the relationships that you have at the gym.
I got a lot of good people I work with. Jason's actually the first person I've ever worked with in MMA, so he's known me since I would just come by the gym occasionally, you know, so he's known and believed in my talent for a long time. There's also, of course, Marco Alvin, who's, you know, runs Team Link, who's, you know, helped me out tremendously. And then there's another coach, Hector Arvelo, who's, you know, my striking coach. And we have a good team down there. You know, I've improved greatly from my first fight, from a guy coming in with no martial arts background at all. And, you know, to where I am now, I owe a lot, you know, to my coaches, all three of them, as well as just, you know, staying dedicated to it.
Yeah, and clearly things are going well for you, capturing your second belt in your last fight. I think the big question that a lot of people really want to know is, when are you going to turn pro, and how long is it going to take you before we're seeing you in the Bellator ranks and one day in the UFC?
That'll come with time. You know, am I confident that I could go pro tomorrow and win pro fights? Absolutely. You know, I train with pro fighters. I know where I stack up with pro fighters, but we have a plan. We have a plan for me, and, you know, our plan is much bigger than, you know, local pro fights and stuff. Like you said, like the Bellator, UFC. The UFC is the goal. So, you know, although I think I could, you know, go into these local pro cards and do just what I'm doing as an amateur now, I think I could do it as a pro tomorrow if I had to. But, you know, I'm thinking down the road, we're thinking big fights, UFC, best fighters in the world. So we're still getting better. I'm still improving. You know, I'm still young in the game. It's coming soon. It's definitely coming soon. We don't have an exact timetable. But when I do go, I will be 100% ready to fight anybody.
You know, it's funny too. I got a buddy of mine around here that is he just turned pro as a welterweight, and he's told me how difficult it is to find fights as a welterweight here in the New England area. Would you agree with that assessment, or do you think that there actually are a lot of welterweights to fight?
I've had, as an amateur, I've had some trouble here and there with people pulling out and stuff like that. I think there's guys, but a lot of people, for whatever reason, try to pick and choose and cherry pick their fights. You know, I don't really fight anybody. You know, I think there's a lot of people trying to get easy fights and pad their records. So I think a lot of that probably contributes to it.
Yeah, well, I think as the sport continues to grow, hopefully we'll see some more legitimate fighters kind of infiltrated into that division and make it a little bit more exciting and give you some more opportunities as well before you do hit the big time. Before we let you go, Pat, I got to get your thoughts. The fight of the century is coming up here in the near future. Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, that's all anybody seems to be talking about now. What are your thoughts on the fight? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the thought for me is, first and foremost, great for Conor McGregor. He's going to make a whole lot of money. He's kind of built himself into this, you know, megastar. In terms of the fight, you know, logical thinking would say that Floyd should absolutely win. McGregor hits very hard, so there's always that excitement, the fact that he's such a hard puncher, and, you know, a 12-round fight, there's a chance that he could, you know, a chance that he could hit Floyd and hurt him. And Floyd doesn't really hit that hard. So, you know, Conor will probably be able to stay around a little while. But, you know, my belief is, you know, Floyd should pick him apart, you know, in a strictly boxing event. You know, if it was an MMA fight, Floyd wouldn't last 30 seconds with Conor. But in boxing, I think Floyd's going to win. I'm actually more excited to see the press conferences. I hope they have one every week. That would be the funnest part of it. But I'm going to watch like everyone else is. I'm going to be cheering for Conor. And it's a win-win situation for him. You know,
yeah.
He's supposed to lose in the boxing match to, you know, Floyd Mayweather, and he's going to make what whatever it is, $100 million. So good for him.
Yeah, right. Tell me about it. And I was hearing Dana White say the other day that not only will they be doing the embedded series and the UFC countdown, all the UFC stuff, but boxing, they do their 24/7 on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to be doing that. So it's just going to be double the attention leading up to this fight. And I can't wait, man. Brian, do you have something to say?
It's going to be quite a spectacle, absolutely. It's going to be great entertainment, I know that.
I was just going to say, I don't think they'll do the HBO version. They might have a Showtime equivalent, but Showtime has the rights to it, at least.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, regardless, either way, it's just going to be double the attention, and I can't wait. As a combat sports junkie like myself, this is like Christmas in the middle of summer. So, Pat, always a pleasure to have you on, man. Before we let you go, any sponsors you'd like to thank or anyone you'd like to give a shout-out that's helped you reach your goal of picking up a second belt?
Give a shout out to all my training partners at Team Link, you know, pushing me every day, my coaches, my family, and that always, you know, deals with my craziness and me being non-training all the time. And, you know, just all the people that came out to support, you know, the fan base. We call the crowd the jungle every time I fight. So thanks to the jungle for coming out, and thanks for continuing to support me, and I'll keep putting on a good show.
Pat Casey, everyone, thanks for coming on again, man. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
That is the audio stylings of the epic sax solo, the epic sax guy. I said sax.
Sax.
Not, yeah, S-A-X.
Okay.
You were giving me those weird looks over here.
Yeah.
It's actually a band. I don't know actually the lineage, but the song is called Runaway. It's a song from Moldova. It was like this European like song contest, but they had this guy who does like this sax solo in the middle of it, and he's got like these frosted tips that were popular back in like the early 2000s, late 90s, and he's just wearing these white sunglasses, which you know are not a good look. The white sunglasses are never really a good look, at least if they're clad all in white, because it makes you look like a D-bag. I'm just going to put that out there. And he's wearing a sleeveless T-shirt, and he's like air humping with the sax. And if you ever see that video, go check it out. It's I think it's like called the Sunstroke Project, Runaway. It's from Moldova, but again, it's European, so what are you going to say? But I'm a big fan of a good sax solo on anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of a sax solo as well. And sometimes, you know, you just need to listen to some
do you usually
saxophone.
Do you usually sax solo alone?
Yeah, obviously. Sometimes
who does the sax solo? Just sometimes randomly it hits you and you're just like, I gotta go have some sax.
Oh, goodness.
By the way, do you know the greatest saxophone appearance in any song of all time, barring Kenny G? Kenny G is a GOAT.
Yeah.
I heard him on the Le Batard show for a week on Super Bowl week.
Yeah.
And Kenny G, I thought, was just a laughingstock and could not care less about him. I love Kenny G now. He's one of my favorite people because he was just had such a good personality. So he is on the height of the height. But do you know like the song with the greatest saxophone solo?
No.
You don't know.
Well, if you say it, maybe it'll jog my memory.
I might have to play it for you. Let me see if I can get this queued up in time. It is the greatest little bit of saxophone in the beginning of any sort of song in history, my friend. In history. You still have no idea?
Rum Shaker?
That's pretty good. That's
right?
In the top five.
Rex in Effect?
That's in the top five. But it pales in comparison.
Mm. Oh, George Michael.
To Careless Whisper.
Yeah.
Just listen to that sound.
Yeah. George Michael.
Oh, so good. I actually went on a bachelor party, and for whatever reason, Careless Whisper came on. I don't know why. But that was the song of the bachelor party. You know how like the bachelor party has like little different things that you remind yourselves of?
Sure.
It was that, and there was another song, too. I think it's like Fire on High by ELO.
Okay.
those were the two songs of the bachelor party. We sang that the whole night long, which probably really annoyed people bar hopping out in the city of Portland, Maine that night. But who cares?
Careless Whisper.
Oh, wow. I downloaded the song. It's so good. Yeah. I spent the dollar on iTunes.
On iTunes. As you should. Speaking of iTunes, go to our iTunes page.
Good plug and transition, Ryan.
And make sure that you give us a 5-star rating and a nice little comment. We always appreciate it. Thank you, Ed Troshenik, for all of your help. And he's always been pushing me to make sure that I keep saying this, show in and show out.
Exactly.
Because it definitely helps us out and helps us give you more content, which is what you really want.
Exactly. More content. Like Ryan doing a little solo sax by himself.
That's right. That's right, Brian Stackpool. I'm back for the sax. The solo sax. I do this for you. Okay? I love you.
I like your transition now, Yoel Romero. Just like, I need to get out of this one. How do I do it? Yeah. Diaz's won't work. Yoel Romero. Speaking of Romero, though, let's talk about this UFC 213 card and give us our prediction. By the way, do you see this nice belt I'm wearing around my waist right now, Ryan? Very nice. It's because I'm the reigning champion. I won the last time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Someone didn't want to pick Max Holloway, thinking he wouldn't win in Brazil, so this belt's now firmly around my waist.
Look, I thought Max was going to win, but I just went with, I thought it was going to go to a decision, and I thought that Aldo was going to get the nod because he's in Brazil and kind of like a shady win, you know, but whatever, it is what it is. Max won.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Yeah, it fits nicely. It's really good. I've been picking up chicks left and right with it. They're like, what is that belt? It's so plasticky. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I've been picking correct MMA fights.
My championship belt, not a big deal.
No biggie. I actually have a legit championship belt at my house. I won a fantasy baseball title, so I treated myself.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's
nice.
It's adorned somewhere in the facility in which I live. I'm just going to put that out there. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if you can take the belt back. I'm going to try to defend it here today. We'll do four fights from the main card. And let's start with Anthony Pettis and Jim Miller. I'll let you start first on this one. I'll pick the next one. We'll go back and forth.
Okay.
So Anthony Pettis, Jim Miller at lightweight 155.
You know, I think this fight is more about Anthony Pettis than it is about Jim Miller. You know, Jim Miller is a veteran. He's a tough guy. He always comes to fight. You got to be elite to put him away because he's tough as nails, okay? And he's just one of those guys. I hate to use the term gatekeeper, but it is what it is. You know, he seems to always beat all the guys that aren't quite good enough to be in that top 10 of the division. And the guys that are elite, Anthony Pettis used to be elite. He was the champion at one point. Now he's been on a little bit of a skid. You talk about his last couple fights. He lost via round 3 TKO to Max Holloway. He was able to submit Charles Oliveira previous to that. And then he had 3 losses in a row before that to Edson Barboza, Eddie Alvarez, and Dos Anjos. And granted, all of those are really, really tough guys. But what has been going on with Anthony Pettis? I don't really know because it's almost like that Benson Henderson type of comparison. You know, you're at the top of the food chain, and then all of a sudden you're losing left and right. I'm not quite sure what it is. I'm expecting Pettis to turn things around and get this win, just because I think he has a higher ceiling than Jim Miller. Jim Miller's a great fighter. He's tough as nails. I just don't think he has as many ways to beat Pettis as Pettis does to beat him. So I'm going to say probably it's going to go to the third round, and if it's not a decision, I think Pettis might finish him with maybe something on the ground or some punches, but I'm going to go with Pettis either way.
You're going to go with Pettis. Looking back at Pettis, he won that lightweight championship at such a young age. He won that back in 2013, so 4 years ago. He's 30 years old right now, so 26 years of age is quite an accomplishment, but it's been trying ever since then. He defended it one time to Melendez, and then you mentioned the 3-fight losing streak, including losing the belt to Dos Anjos. I just don't know what's wrong with him. He just does not seem to have his mojo back ever since winning that title in the UFC lightweight division, because he went down to featherweight, thought maybe this will be better. He can dominate people a little bit more with a little bit of a weight cut. He beat Charles Oliveira, and then he got Max Holloway, kind of because Khabib couldn't do it in that fight. So he was kind of the replacement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no shame in losing to Max, but it doesn't look good when you've lost now 4 fights out of your last 5. And he's got all the talent in the world. He's going to be facing a guy 3 years his senior in Jim Miller. But Jim Miller's no slouch either, and I was looking back at what he was able to accomplish, too. And sure, is he coming off a loss? Yes, but to Dustin Poirier. But he had won three fights before, including Takanori Gomi, who I think is a pretty good fighter, Joe Lauzon, who I absolutely adore and is a beast, and Thiago Alves. So, with that in mind, I'm going to take Jim Miller.
Ooh, okay.
I feel like Anthony Pettis is in one of those ruts that he needs someone to get out of, and maybe Jim Miller's that perfect person. I just don't think it's this one. For some reason, I got this feeling in the back of my head that Jim Miller will be able to pull it off.
This is going to be the fight that loses you that belt.
Yo, you think
you're going to come back and you're going to be
like, all right.
I wish I just would have listened to Ryan right there. I might still hold this belt, but instead it's going to be wrapped around this waist.
I'm going
right
to have
here.
To get some extenders if it's going to go around your waist.
Oh, whoa, okay.
Well, if you're going to talk about my belt that way, okay. I'm going to have to talk about extending the belt.
Okay.
You don't talk about my baby like that. You don't talk about my baby.
That's right. Talk about it. You're going to have to step up in weight class if you're going to take on this guy right here.
Anytime, any place. Next fight. I'll start this one off. Fabricio Werdum versus Alistair Overeem. Ryan's favorite UFC fighter, Alistair Overeem. He loves the Ream.
I do. I love Overeem. I think he's a talented fighter. And I love going to disco balls and dancing with models.
Alistair Overeem coming off a loss to Stipe Miocic, came right back at it, beat Mark Hunt, and very convincing fashion in the third round via KO knees, one of the great knockouts I've seen this year. I've always liked Alistair Overeem. I think his talent is phenomenal. He has fought over 50 times in an MMA cage, which is absolutely ridiculous if you think about it. That Mark Hunt fight, if I'm doing the math here quickly, was his 52nd fight. Actually, not even 52nd, 57th fight in MMA, not even including his kickboxing stuff. So that is quite impressive. But when I look at a guy like Fabricio Werdum, who lost his championship on home soil to Stipe Miocic, and then went in against Travis Brown, and then beat him via unanimous decision, but did not finish him, that might be a little disappointing. But this is a guy who beat Cain Velasquez, Mark Hunt, Travis Brown, Nogueira. Just the list goes on and on. But one of his Achilles heels is Alistair Overeem. And the Ream has looked good, even challenging Stipe for the title, in which he ultimately lost. But Werdum, I don't know, just something about Werdum. Call it a little bit of a hunch. He just seems super motivated after he lost his title following a 6-fight losing streak in which he also won the title. I just got a feeling that Werdum is going to be able to get that win back. He's also going to avenge that loss. Not avenge it, but get to the point where he's facing Stipe again. He wants that shot. And this is basically a de facto number one contender one for the heavyweight. So I feel like the Ream is going to be a great opponent, but he's going to fall eventually to Fabricio Werdum.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to echo those sentiments. I mean, they fought previously. The last time was at Strikeforce in 2011, and Overeem won a unanimous decision that fight. And again, Fabricio Werdum is just one of those guys. Him and Damian Maia are widely considered probably the two best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners on the planet. Especially who compete in the UFC. Those guys, head and shoulders, are just elite when it goes to the ground. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think eventually it will go to the ground, and I think Fabricio is going to find a way to catch Overeem and submit him. So I agree. I think that he really wants to really get back to another crack at the title, and I think the two guys that are right there, obviously Stipe is the champ, and then Cain Velasquez, he's as good as it gets.
Right.
I'm scared for whoever he faces when he's motivated, because he's a scary dude. But in order for Fabricio to get back to another shot with one of those guys, he needs to win this fight, and I think he will.
All right, so we agree on that one. Let's go to the next one. Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker, and Whittaker has really jumped up with some impressive performances as of late, including beating Jacare Souza, who a lot of people around here watched just not necessarily destroy Tim Boach, but was able to see him handle him quite well. But to take him down and to do so
in the second round via TKO head kick and punches. It was pretty impressive. So, Ryan, I'll let you look at this one first.
Well, you know, this is a really, really intriguing matchup. This fight might be the one I'm most looking forward to of the whole night.
Me too.
Because I think Romero is an absolute stud. He's the number one ranked middleweight. He's the soldier of God, and he's taking on the Reaper and Robert Whittaker, who's the number three ranked middleweight. So interesting style of monikers there with the matchup.
Yeah.
But Romero, obviously, this is a guy that, aside from Tim Kennedy, well, that fight where Tim Kennedy hurt him, he's really been running through people. You saw what he did to Chris Weidman? I mean, who does that to Chris Weidman?
I know.
It was unbelievably placed knee, and Weidman was out. And it was just, I don't know, like, this is a guy that I'm not quite sure who can beat him. On the other hand, Robert Whittaker, he's on a 7-fight win streak. He's beat guys like Brad Tavares, Uriah Hall, Rafael Natal, Derek Brunson, and as you said, Jacare Souza. So Whittaker is someone that's coming in with a point to prove. He's just been continuing to go in and do his job day in and day out and beat these high-level guys. He's very, very technical. His striking is unbelievably good. Probably the stiffest test on the feet as far as technicality goes that Romero has ever fought, or at least, you know, recently anyways. So this is a really interesting matchup. I'm not quite sure what to do here, Brian, because honestly, my head is telling me, oh, Romero's a beast. Go with Romero. I think he's gonna win this fight. I just have a sneaky feeling that we're going to see what Whittaker did to Brunson and Souza. I think he might be able to catch Romero and hurt him. And he's one of those guys that if Whittaker catches you and he hurts you, he's not going to wait. He's going to capitalize on it, and he's going to strike. And I think that this might be the fight that derails the hype train a little bit for Romero, because after seeing what Tim Kennedy did and how Romero is able to be hurt, I think Whittaker might be the guy that can exploit him. And so I'm torn on this one. I'm going to go with my gut. And I just have this feeling that Whittaker is gonna stop him. I think he's gonna win a second round TKO.
And this is the fight I get the belt back because your gut is wrong, and it gets me the one back because I'm gonna go Yoel Romero. Just the one loss way back in the day, 2011, as we're getting closer and closer to that anniversary, back in Strikeforce, the final time Romero fought in Strikeforce before, you know, became the UFC. Anyways. He has just been an absolute monster in there. I just like what Romero has been able to do. He has no neck, man. He's got no neck. It's hard to take a guy down who has no neck. The only knock I would have onto him is he's 40 years of age. And every single time I think a 40-year-old cannot do what he is doing. I know he comes from Cuban stock and that maybe they're a little bit differently constructed than some of our American fighters or even our Australian fighters in Whittaker's case. But still, until he proves me otherwise, I'm going to go with Yoel Romero. I love what Whittaker's been able to do, but he's sort of taken a lot of people by surprise on how his ascent has gotten all the way up in this rankings that I'm going to err on Romero for this time. And I think Whittaker can still climb his ascent, but he'll have to take one step back before he continues it again.
And you may be right, and I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. That's why I'm so intrigued about this matchup,
yeah,
because I really think it could go either way. And I like both of these guys. I'm just going with, you know, sometimes I got to listen to my gut and just go with it. And that's kind of what I'm doing here. That's what I should have done with Max and Jose, but I didn't do that. I was like, you know what? Aldo's the former champ. Well, I guess he was the current champ at that point too, but he's proven himself time in and time out. This is in Brazil. Although I want Max win, I think he will. I'm just going to go with Aldo. That's kind of how I feel about this fight. But I'm going to go with Whittaker. I feel like he has the goods to get it done.
All right. Well, we shall see. And we shall also see what happens at the main event of this card. It's going to be Amanda Nunes defending her 135 crown against Valentina Shevchenko in the main event here of UFC 213. And this one, for me, is one of the easier ones to call. For whatever reason, I have no doubt in my mind that Amanda Nunes walks out on top when all is said and done. Not only has she beaten Valentina before, albeit a unanimous decision lasting all five or all three rounds in the fight and 15 total minutes, but just the way she has dominated. Shevchenko was her three fights ago. Then she rattled off a victory against Misha Tate in impressive fashion, a first-round submission finish with a rear naked choke. Then she destroyed Ronda Rousey and made her look like she had never stepped into the octagon before, in my opinion. This is the decimation of her, which happened back this past December. I think she can continue to do so. I don't think she's gotten too cocky. I think Ronda got too cocky, and she did not take Holly Holm serious back in the day, and that's when she ultimately lost the title. All that stuff set aside, I think this is the real deal, and someone who's going to reign over the division for many more fights.
And you basically just took all the material that I was going to say. So I am not quite sure what else to say here other than I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think Amanda Nunes...
It's nice for a change.
Amanda Nunes is the real deal. She's a scary, scary woman. And, I think you're going to see her come out looking for blood like she always seems to. And I think she's probably going to finish this fight because as good as Shevchenko is... I think that Nunes keeps getting better. And when you keep getting better and your confidence grows, that's a scary tandem right there. And right now, her confidence is through the roof and her skill set is as good as it's ever been. So I think she's going to finish this fight. I'm going to say round three TKO for the champ.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think it's going to be earlier than that.
You do?
I really do. I know time I went the duration, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's going to go three rounds. But...
You know, Shevchenko, she actually has some ties to...
this area, right?
This area, yeah. She comes up and trains with Jared Lawton down at Lawton MMA. And I was talking to Aaron Lacy, and he's been able to go down there and train with her before. And he raves about her Brazilian jiu-jitsu, how good she is on the ground. I mean, she's an elite athlete. She deserves to be in this title contender spot that she's in right now. And I think that, you know, she took Nunes the distance the last time. And I think that you're going to see the heart of her really shine through here. But in the end, it's just not going to be enough. So I think it's going to go a little ways, but Nunes gets the job done.
Yeah, not to knock her, but Holly Holm, one of her victories in her last two fight win streak, Pena, the other one. Holly, I love her to death, but are we starting to see some of the facade break off a little bit? I know she won her last time out, but is she necessarily the one we thought was the conquering hero when she took down Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But to be honest, too, and I love Holly Holm. Yeah. I think that she's amazing. But you talk about not just in fighting, but in sports in general, the mental side of everything is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah. And to me, there's something, when I just look at Holly Holm, it almost looks like she's struggling with something mentally. Like she always just seems to be like a little over emotional. And that can play a huge role in any sport, especially this one where it's mano a mano going up against someone inside a steel cage for however long. So I think that has played a little bit into her kind of falling a little bit. We'll see if she can turn things around. I hope she does.
Yeah, she beat Bitch last time out, and
that's someone I can't stand.
Yeah,
you see,
I can't stand
showboating
her either.
Beforehand, and then Holm knocks her out. I was like, yes, bravo.
I was so happy on that one. Thank goodness. Hopefully, this is the beginning of a nice little win streak for Holly. Before we get out, I think we forgot completely, even on our last episode, to congratulate Tim Boach on a nice victory. By the way, at his last fight card, too.
Unbelievable performance.
Yeah, not much more you can say. I also want to echo Devin Powell, though his second UFC loss went the distance again, and there was some debate whether or not he would even last that long. The fight in that third round from Devin Powell was absolutely astonishing, and I got to give him all the credit in the world, too.
Yeah, and one of his coaches I was seeing the other day just said that he keeps getting better and better, and that you're going to see the next time out, if he does come back, we'll see what happens, but you're going to see an even better Devin Powell, so I'm excited to see that. Congratulations to him for his second strong performance in the UFC and showing a lot of heart.
And hopefully the UFC gives him another fight, too, because he has mentioned multiple times to us that if the UFC says they're done with him, he is done.
Yeah,
he's got some money in the bank. He's got a wedding coming up later this summer, and he just says that he doesn't need to go out and fight in other places. So I respect that. I wish he wouldn't, because I think he's still got a lot to offer the sport of MMA and some money to be made. But regardless, And back to Boach real quick. You've got a pretty interesting, not title fight, but fight for him potentially that you think would be really fun to watch for UFC fans all over the globe.
Oh, yeah. I think him and the Spider, Anderson Silva, makes a lot of sense. I think at this point of Boach's career, he needs a marquee win like he just had against Hendricks. Another big one against the greatest ever at the 185-pound division, a guy that's a little bit older now, that's on the downside of his career, but he's still elite. He's still right there in the top of the division. I think he's ranked number 7 or something right now at 185. A win over the Spider, that bumps him right up the ladder and puts him in a real small group of guys that, you know, one or two more wins, you're looking at maybe a potential title shot. Maybe. I mean, I hope so. I'd love to see that for Tim. And in order for him to get there at this point in his career, he needs to beat a big fight like this against Anderson Silva. So that's why I'm pushing for it. I hope it happens.
Yeah, if he could beat the Spider, then maybe he could go against Jacare again.
Yeah. I mean,
that would be a logical one if Jacare, depending on what he does next time out. So there's still a lot of hope for Tim Boach, who was on the cusp of being cut from the UFC, to maybe jettison himself all the way up the rankings, and it would be a great sign to see. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that one. By the way, I was keeping track in my head. We had two different fights projected on this card.
Okay. Well, there's only four, but we only picked four fights. So
let's say Jim Miller wins the first fight. That means I will not lose my title. Because even if the Romero fight versus Whitaker goes your way, it would be a flat-footed tie.
Huh.
But if you win the first fight and Anthony Pettis wins the first fight, I still have a chance to tie you because it's champion's rules. Champion cannot lose on a tie, so I would retain my belt for another time. Just going to keep that out there. That's why you were able to hold the theoretical belt beforehand longer for a couple of cards because we tied all this time because we didn't dissent in our opinion. So I'm just going to put that out there for people keeping a track at home.
Okay, so what you're saying is I've held the belt longer than you is what you're saying.
Well, we haven't actually had the belt. This is the first time.
This is a theoretic belt. This is a hypothetical belt.
It's an actual belt because I'm going to go out right now and purchase one at Walmart after we get done the show. It's going to be of the pro wrestling variety because they don't actually offer replica UFC belts anymore. Go figure.
Yeah, I don't know why.
But maybe I'll find a WWE belt that we can
make sure you get one big enough to extend around my waist.
Well, it's going to be hard to find one, I think. I think. I'm just messing with you. Well, it's been a good show, as always. We'll be back and better than ever the next one coming right around the corner. We got some great stuff coming up later this month, too, Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Always. A lot of guests. We've already talked to a couple of guys, and Peter Barrett and Joe Giannetti, who are going to be fighting soon. There's been a lot of trash talk between them, so we're gonna get them on the show. I've spoken to a UFC tough title contender. Well, he's going to be in the championship for the show, James Krause, and he's agreed to come on the show as well. And also Tony Martin and Logan Storley, a couple guys that are really making their name known, as well as Matt Bissett and Kurt Holabaugh. We're going to talk to those guys as well. So a lot of great guests coming to you in July and August.
Perfect. Well, that wraps up another edition of The Main Event here, episode number 62. We're getting closer and closer to 100. What are we going to do for 100?
We got to do something big.
Connor?
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Connor in studio.
Oh, God, that would be unbelievable.
Maybe Dana White in studio. Yeah. You think we could do that? I think we could actually swing that.
I hope so. I mean, that would be pretty sweet. I love Dana, and to have him in here would be to think when we first started the show to where we're at right now, and to actually be able to talk about having him in here and think that's a possibility, that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see what we can do. I think we might be able to at least get him over the phone regardless. But anyways, that's going to wrap up this edition. We'll see you next time here on The Main Event.
Peace.